Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week.
It's the Roguecast, episode 162. And guys, weekends coming up are going to be kind of crazy.
I know. I've looking at my calendar, and it's like a sea of red on my Google Calendar.
You want to see my calendar?
No. you plan much more meticulously than I do, so I assume yours is like just something by the minute.
Yeah, I want to thank you for not using the word insane in that sentence, because I know it's what you were thinking.
I think it was heavily implied.
Yeah,
right. I let people read between the lines because I'm sly that way.
Yeah, meticulously is code for Randy's in that job.
Yeah, you know who else was meticulous? The killer John Doe in Seven.
Yeah.
With his journals meticulously kept.
You know what? I would never do that because I don't write in paper. I might have a Google Seven.
That's right.
Google Document.
He's so out of date. He can't even go back and edit his crazy journals.
Exactly.
He has to rewrite them from the beginning.
Yeah. What kind of inefficiency is that? So this Saturday, International Tabletop Day, which is, it's like the big holiday for board gamers. And that is going to be, we'll have games going from like noon to 6. We have folks coming out to demo their game, Town of Salem, which is where I think you're trying to be the last guy who is not a witch or something like that.
Okay.
Sounds like fun. They're demoing their game. We're going to have that for sale. We also will, of course, be demoing a ton of other games. You're going to run Hero Realms.
Yep.
I'm going to run Sushi Go Party and maybe some Suro.
Yeah, I think I'm going to bring some of the Hero Realms, the different starters I've got up there for it. I don't know if we talked about this in the podcast the other week, but I did find that the starters really liven up the game,
nice.
The new starter sets.
And then we'll have Red Dragon Inn. We'll have Star Trek Panic and Castle Panic and Boss Monster and Machikoro and Arkham Horror. Just a ton of cool games. And any of those games that day will be 15% off. And all other games in the store will be 10% off that day. So if you're looking to buy some board games, this Saturday is a good day to do it. And if you have a Rogue card, you get an additional 10% discount.
Damn.
Yeah.
There was a couple that came by yesterday, and they were asking like when Tabletop Day was. And I think they had mixed it up on their calendar, and they had to go visit like somebody else this weekend, and they found out that they were not going to be able to make it. They were so disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, it was like they found out Christmas had been called off.
Well, it is. It's Board Gamers Christmas. Yeah, and the next week is Comic Book Christmas, because it's Free Comic Book Day.
Yep.
And again, if you have a membership card, you can reserve some extra books for yourself, and we'll be sending out details on that in the members' newsletter. So if you've been thinking about getting a Rogue membership, this week would be a really good time to do it, because then you can take advantage of some of our coolest stuff.
Yep. By the way, Randy, you know how we have, we're going to have some cosplayers out for Free Comic
Day? We are going to have some cosplayers out.
We need some game-themed cosplayers, like somebody for Tabletop Day, like somebody dressed as Machikoro.
Someone dressed as the robber from Catan.
Yes, or the entire city of Machikoro.
Yeah, the entire city of Machikoro. Yes.
I want somebody dressed up as a Carcassonne piece.
Just a meeple?
Yeah, sure. That'd be all right.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But how about this, Randy? A sexy meeple.
Sexy meeple, yeah. No, that's Halloween.
That's right, right. We'll get around to Halloween.
But yes, we're going to have Spider-Gwen, a Stormtrooper, and May from Overwatch will all be here on Free Comic
Cool
Day. So you can come out and get your picture taken and all that cool stuff.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it's going to be cool. It's like everybody has to wait a little bit in line, like 10 or 15 minutes.
Yep.
And it's not that bad, because there's cool stuff to check out anyway.
Yep.
And you're talking with comic book friendly people.
Yep.
But now you will also be able to like maybe talk it up or take photos and stuff with cosplayers.
Depending on what time the cosplayers are here.
True.
They will not be here the whole day.
Yep.
And then
May should just go by and freeze everybody.
Yeah.
Shoot them up with her icicle guns.
I'm impressed that you know what that is.
I know some stuff.
All right. And then it's a couple months out, but after that, we have the big event for role-playing games, which is Free RPG Day, which is Saturday, June 19th. And on that day, I believe we're going to have some role-playing games going. I believe one of our Adventurers League DMs is going to run something from Tales of the Yawning Portal. And I am hoping to be able to run the Starfinder adventure. So it'll be a good day to come out and try some games and get some free games. So, bunch of cool stuff coming.
Yeah.
And we have a big announcement coming for July, but we're going to save that a little bit.
Okay.
But,
what is it?
Never
Fourth
gets old.
Of July.
Never gets old. All right. So, let's move on to the news. And there's a fair bit of news this week. King Kong Skull Island is coming to TV. This is kind of a weird one. It's in development. It's not like a for sure kind of thing. But it says Oscar nominees Jonathan Penner and Stacey Title from The Bye Bye Man.
Okay.
They're writing the script and executive producing. Danny Festa of Trolls is also executive producing. And
It's is back Trolls by... that Netflix thing?
No, Trolls was a Justin Timberlake kids movie.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the series is backed by the estate of King Kong's creator, which is kind of cool. And apparently this is going to be a female lead with a multicultural ensemble that will explore both the wonders and horrors of Skull Island and its origins.
Is that Skull Island as specifically in the continuity of the newest movie?
I believe so.
Okay.
Now, here's my question. Did you guys see the movie?
I saw it.
You saw it.
No.
So, is it like, would like a series exploring the island be interesting?
Yeah, I could see that.
Okay.
I just assumed it's a fun idea.
I assume that it was this sort of usual, mildly racist natives who were worshipping Kong or something like that and occasionally running from him. Like, I wouldn't have thought that there'd be, like, a deep story.
There's more to it than that, actually. Even in the movie, they go a little further. Okay. So,
and there's monsters. There's more monsters, right?
They said origins. Like, do they mean, like, this could be set sometime in the past?
My guess is that this female lead in the ensemble will be, like, archaeologists who maybe after the events of the movie in the 70s go in the modern day and explore the island or something.
I can see that.
Like, you do sort of a lost thing.
I was saying, like, maybe,
things.
Like, when King Kong was a little baby Kong, back in the days of Lucky Lindy.
Interesting.
When he was doing the Charleston back in those days.
I wouldn't rule it out. there's also a trailer for Cloak and Dagger.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That's on what's
it's
the
on
network?
Freeform,
which is Disney's spinoff
family.
Channel or whatever, yeah. It looked very teen drama.
Oh, yeah?
Well, you didn't watch it?
No, I did.
Okay, yeah.
And I agree.
Yes.
Yeah. It was one of those kind of watching it where I'm like, that's okay, yeah, all right. At some point they're gonna have the powers, right?
Yeah.
And it took a long ass time to kind of see a little bit of power stuff.
So on my friends list, people seemed very into this. Like they were like, oh, this looks good. The people who I know
my friends seemed confused.
Who are not big Cloak and Dagger fans all seem to think this looked kind of cool because I think it has that Riverdale effect.
Yeah.
It's like it looks well done.
Right, like it looks like you could slip into the notion of it as sort of a teen drama, and then suddenly there's a little bit of powers in it.
Well, if you're talking about characters who most people who aren't already comic readers have never heard of, I mean,
Cloak and Dagger are pretty much on the D-list, yes.
Yeah, so their stories are infinitely malleable, and you can kind of do it in a different way, and no one...
It does look like they're doing it with the drug aspect of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was essentially, they weren't actually addicts, they got kidnapped and somebody was like, I'm testing the newest hyper-mutated form of speed or something on you.
But they were
and it, like, triggered powers in them.
They were street kids, weren't they?
Like, homeless? I think they were runaways.
And I think they were runaways.
I think that's what they're getting into here, is the sort of the notion of street kids, which has become much more of a thing. You know, kids living on the street for whatever reason. I think that's going to be sort of their focus here. I'm not, like, super excited about it. I thought it was not a great trailer. But I just kind of want... Iron Fist has burned me. And now if I don't see costumes and powers, I'm like, why are you so embarrassed your source material?
Yeah. Now, you know, and the interesting thing is Cloak and Dagger was always a comic that kind of tied in a fair amount of drama into its stuff. They did fight villains and things, and they had weird street villains and kind of creepy users, it always felt like. Not literally drug users, but people who would manipulate people. And like,
well, I remember they had like...
I feel it was kind of seamy.
They had like the Chicken Hawks who would like show up at Port Authority and get the kids who were coming to New York to be... dancers or whatever, and put them in a life of prostitution and drugs. And that
right,
kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
And I feel like, yeah, that's what they were doing.
Right, it was kind of a gritty book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they're going there. This feels more something like you would find on Disney's Freeform.
Yeah.
Nick, I don't know, any other impressions? Yay, nay?
Yeah, I'm going to watch it. I mean,
Are you excited?
Sure, it's Cloak and Dagger, and you.
What's
do
wrong
see,
with you?
You do see Cloak with his cloak, and
yeah,
Dagger
at
does
the
use
very,
a dagger.
Very end of the trailer,
point.
They're like, "Look, here's this thing.
Here's a cloak, and she's holding a hard thing that looks
like
a light."
I mean, this is also a teaser trailer, so you know you can't show everything. And yeah, I mean,
Did the Supergirl one show her in costume and flying and stuff?
Here's the thing: a teaser is supposed to tease. It's supposed to make you want to watch it. So I don't buy this argument that they can't show everything.
There's nothing in there that made you want to watch the show?
Not really, no. I did not think this looks that good to me.
Well, I would have thought that, if you were going to, like, just give you a glimpse of, a quick glimpse of them with powers, dagger-throwing her light knives through some people and, like, knocking them unconscious. Yep. And Cloak enveloping, like, a bunch of people surrounding her, and they're like, how's she's going to get out? And then Cloak just, like, envelops all of them.
That's all I want. Just, like, a little...
Right, it can be real fast, too.
Just a little glimpse of it. That's all I want. And there was no glimpse, which leads me to believe this will be one of those shows where they go 6 episodes before they ever use their powers.
You're saying it's going to be the Smallville of Cloak and Daggers?
That's what I'm worried about. But we'll see. Yep. We'll see. I don't know. In other Marvel Cinematic news, it does look like they found their directors for Captain Marvel. The movie that's going to star...
Brie Larson,
yes. And so they have got Mississippi Grind directors, Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. I don't know who that is. I don't know what that is. They're a writing-directing duo who also worked on Half Nelson, Sugar... they won a prize at Sundance for Gowanus Brooklyn. They sound like sort of up-and-comers, which Marvel's done a pretty good job of finding those people.
Yeah, they have. But it's not like they went out and picked a directors that are like, oh, well-known for action-adventure movies or whatever.
But also the script is being written by Nicole Perlman from Guardians of the Galaxy and Meg LaFave from Inside Out.
Okay.
So
it will have heart and whimsy.
Yeah, and I think we're looking at... I think we're looking at 2019 for Captain Marvel.
I believe that's right.
Yes. March 8th, 2019.
That's... In general, I'm kind of trusting in their director choices these days. Same. So I have some hope for that.
This is a bit of interesting news. There is a D&D deck building game coming out from the guys who made the Shadowrun deck building game called Dragonfire. For those who don't know, deck building, like the DC deck building that we were always on, or Hero Realms, the Star Realms that Dave is so hyped for.
Right, and it goes back to, I think, kind of the one that kind of kicked off the revolution would be Dominion.
Yes, that's right.
And then there's a few other, like Thunderstone and things like that, that came around before some of the big licensed ones.
This is the first D&D deck building game.
And it's cooperative, if I'm not mistaken.
It is co-op. It is, you choose from dwarf to elf, half-orc to human, assume one of the quintessential roles of cleric, rogue, fighter, or wizard. Equipped with weapons, spells, and magic items, you begin your adventure along the famed Sword Coast. Then journey to other Forgotten Realms locales such as Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter, and Waterdeep in future expansions.
You know what's interesting about that is most of these games that I've played are really quite highly abstract.
Yeah.
Like, I really like Star Realms, but if you kind of removed the cool trappings of the alien spaceships and stuff like that, there's different colors that have different powers to make you discard or do extra damage and things like that.
Right.
And now they have done a very nice job of kind of throwing the sort of, you know, making, you know, really nice artwork and everything. But, you know, I don't usually... I wouldn't have thought of it as having specific locales.
I wouldn't have either. It reminds me of sort of what the Pathfinder card game did, and I wonder if they're going to take a page out of that.
Well, Arkham, the new Arkham horror game is... what do they call it? Like an LCG game?
Yeah, LCG, living card game.
Yeah, but it does work on somewhat similar principles. It has very specific locations. You're literally going from, like... In the first one, like room to room inside a house, and later ones you're like, oh, you're in the park, and here's the swamp, and here's the several representing the forested area, and here's the graveyard.
Again, it reminds me a little bit of the Pathfinder card game, which also had leveling up and that kind of thing, which I think Arkham Horror does too.
Yeah, it does.
And that sounds like this.
Yeah, I felt like Arkham Horror was kind of like in the evolution, next evolution of that Pathfinder style.
Yeah.
And you do have very uniquely different characters, so your decks are pretty different depending on who you're playing, whether it's the tough mobster or the little street urchin kid. I don't know. It sounds pretty cool to me.
I'm excited.
If they come through. Who is it? Who's doing it?
It's the guys who did the Shadowrun deck building game.
I mean, is what company?
Shadowrun. The guys who did Shadowrun.
Oh, the Cryptozoic, is it? Okay.
No, Catalyst.
Catalyst. I just wanted the company.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was coming through Wizards of the Coast themselves or through some
I think it's series. A license. Okay. It's a license.
But yeah, I'm interested.
We have news that HBO is doing a Fahrenheit 451 movie starring Michael B. Jordan and Michael Shannon. Now, have you guys read the novel?
Yes.
Okay, no. I've never read the novel.
You have. Oh, you haven't read it?
I've never read it. And I've never seen the movie, which was adapted in 1966.
Right, by like...
Francois Truffaut?
Yeah, fancy guy, yeah. If you've ever seen it, it looks very kind of like mod and weird.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's altogether successful, but I did always want to see it.
I mean, this is a story about a guy who's a fire. They're firemen, and they burn books that have been outlawed.
Yep.
I don't think right now the notion of censorship of materials is probably very relevant.
No, I don't know where they're going to go with it. Yeah. It sounds like it's probably about as irrelevant as The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, Michael B. Jordan and Michael Shannon, HBO.
Yeah. So Michael B. Jordan is playing the hero of the bunch, a fireman who. Begins to have second thoughts about what he's doing, and I think is like secretly hoarding books.
Yep, I think so.
In a world where people otherwise, the only way to know a book is people memorize whole books.
Yep.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
But as a kid, I had a tough time wrapping my head around that, and it scared me. And then Michael Shannon will be the bad guy who's the.
His boss.
His boss, basically, and who, what my memory of the book is, he's like. He sort of started out as an idealist like the hero and came to decide that, you know, ideas were too dangerous. But he's, like, read all the books, too. So he actually has also sort of committed his own crimes. But ultimately has somehow ended up on the side of, yes, this knowledge is dangerous.
Right.
It's interesting. It's like he's, like... read the stuff, but he has the fascist impulse. So, anyway, it should be both roles that you can sink your teeth into. Michael B. Jordan, of course, I really liked in Creed. And what's Michael Shannon best known for?
He was Zod in Superman.
But, like, what's he been notably good
in? He was fantastic in Boardwalk Empire.
Boardwalk Empire HBO, and stuff like that. Yeah, that's what I was kind of trying to remember.
He's always good, even in stuff that is terrible.
Right.
Which is a lot of the DC stuff he's been in.
Yeah.
See, it couldn't be a podcast without me taking a shot at Superman versus Batman. There it is.
Now we got ourselves a party.
Yeah, everybody drink. All right. X-Files is, speaking of stuff I want to crap on, X-Files is getting a reboot. Or another 10 episodes.
Oh, I thought everybody had fun with that.
Oh, I hated those. I hated most of those episodes.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you liked like the first one and the third one.
I liked the first one, and then when I realized it wasn't going anywhere, it made me as angry as the ones that did that in the previous X-Files run. And then, of course, I loved the one that had the guy from Flight of the Conchords, whose name I can never remember.
Yeah.
Murray.
Yeah.
Rhys Darby.
Yeah, he's great. He should be in everything.
The episode with Rhys Darby was great. But it made me remember that what the pattern of the X-Files was, especially toward the tail end, was that the Monster of the Week stuff was always fun, and the arc stuff was terrible, and that was definitely the case with this
Chris Carter had not figured it all out.
Nope. And I thought maybe he would. So I saw someone make a joke that 10 more episodes, like, oh, so there'll be 3 good episodes of X-Files.
Nick, you gonna watch?
Yeah. I mean, I watched all the... It was 6 episodes last time, right?
Yeah, it was 6.
It was like a little baby season.
This time with 10. I liked them. I didn't think they were
I have a question for both y'all. In general, how were Duchovny and what's her name?
They're great. Anderson?
Yeah, they're still great.
They fall back into their characters easily?
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. I saw some people griping they thought Duchovny was playing a little detached. But that's always what
it is. Wait, I was going to say, like, how much more detached can he get? Yeah. Quaalude level?
I think that's what it was. I think they were saying it felt like he didn't care. And I'm like, that's Fox Mulder. That's what he always does.
Yeah, I was going to say he felt more kind of burned out a little bit.
Yeah. But I am probably not going to watch these.
Yeah.
There's too much else on TV. I'll probably watch an episode, but...
Yeah, I sort of did fall off X-Files back in the day and just never got around to trying out the new ones. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I don't much care for the Chris Carter episodes, but...
Unfortunately, that's a lot of them, and he is still running it.
Yeah, no, I know.
This is one of those where I wish someone else who was, like, a fan of the show had taken it over.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, what's happened with Star Wars. Like, I'd rather see the fans take it over and take it in new directions.
But you haven't, like... You didn't... I don't know.
Dave doesn't like Rogue One. I came around a little bit on Rogue One, although it is Gareth Edwards is boring.
It's a good solid 3 out of 5 for Randy.
Exactly. Dave. I might even go 3.5.
And I'm like 2 to 2.5 for Dave.
So, a movie we'll all like, though, is the Fast and the Furious spinoff that they're working on with Owen Shaw? Is it Owen Shaw? I can't remember which one. Deckard Shaw. Deckard Shaw, Jason Statham's character, and Luke Hobbs, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock's character.
Yeah.
And they're going to be, like, it sounds like they're going to do sort of a buddy comedy action thing with them.
But, like, as those characters, not, like,
as those characters, yeah. Yes. Spin off with those two characters.
Yep. Yeah, they had good chemistry as forced allies who hated each other.
Yeah.
I do wonder if it, like, I don't know if I necessarily want spinoffs of Fast and Furious. I kind of like the ensemble. Like, I always like hanging out with the gang.
Well, I think there is sort of a finite to the gang. Because they've said that 10 movies is what they're going for.
Oh, wait a minute. Have they said... I think you're misinterpreting this, because they have said, yes, they're doing a 9th and 10th installment, that it's a new trilogy. But in no time did they say, but we're not going to make an 11.
I mean, Vin Diesel said he was done in 10, and that was the story.
Yeah,
and that was from Vin Diesel.
But whether you can't they tell me they're not going to do another one with Vin Diesel. Did Vin Diesel say, I'm doing 10 and then I'm out, but in his growly voice?
I think you're misinterpreting,
Nick. I think what you're hearing is they're not doing anymore.
I don't think I misinterpreted him saying that he was doing 10 and that was the story that was going to be told.
But did he say that was it?
I mean, did he say...
Well, it'd be like sort of like saying, yes, after... if somebody said, are you going to do more Lord of the Rings movies to one of those actors? Yeah. And they said, well, it's done after... after Return of the King. Yeah. And then you could easily think, like, they literally meant that. But, of course, several of them cameoed in The Hobbit.
Well, the story here from Vin Diesel is that he said... let's see. He said, part of Balsley is there's something beautiful... Okay. As the world sees this movie, they'll see how it's the beginning of a new trilogy.
Fast 8
is the beginning of a new trilogy.
So 8, 9, and 10 will round that out.
Universal Days, a 9th installment for 2019 and a 10th for 2021.
I mean, I can imagine that even with as much bajillions as they're making off of these, that he might just want to do 3 more and call it.
He might.
You know, at that point, they may have brought in other young Turks like Clint Eastwood's son and all that stuff to fill some roles.
I'm not saying... I mean, 10 movies is a pretty good... It's a pretty good run.
Right.
What
do you call that? That'd be 5. Decology?
Decology.
Yeah.
A decathlon.
A movie decathlon.
Movie decathlon. That's it. That's when you watch all 10.
Yes.
So I'm okay with them doing a spinoff if they're going to end it anyway. I would love to see this universe continue without Vin Diesel if that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
But... I still bet that after they get this trilogy done, that they'll do more.
Yeah.
Unless Vin Diesel's like, I'm tired of being this muscle car guy, and I want to go and be a serious actor.
Right.
I don't see that happening.
He might be tired of money.
Vin Diesel does not strike me as the kind of guy who's going to go all like Bill Murray and try to become a serious actor at the latest part of his career. I don't see it. He's going to put on glasses and be in a Merchant Ivory film.
Do we talk about how they need to bring Han back?
No, they do need to bring Hong back, though.
So that they can redeem Jason Statham's character.
Exactly.
Here was my thought, Randy.
Yep.
Is that you see, because I saw that scene the other day where the car blows up at the end of 5, yep. I think, in the trailer, in the credit sequence, as Jason Statham's walking away all a badass, right? Yep. And you're like, oh, that's a cool scene. Sad about Han. But that's a quick summation.
That's why we didn't let you speak at Han's funeral, Dave.
It was sad, but anyway.
But it was sad, but pretty badass, right? Anyway, peace out.
He literally, in comic book terms, he was not looking. We saw nobody.
Yep.
How I would edit it is that he's walking away. Han manages to get a last reserve of strength. He cuts the seatbelt or whatever was holding him in, and he vaults away from it as it explodes. He does get injured by it. You know, shrapnel hits him or he gets burned or whatever.
And he's a cyborg guy.
And you're like, he's out of commission for like a year or two because he's got to recover from his wounds. And then he's ready to kick some butt again.
You know what I want? I want to reveal that Gal Gadot did not die in the plane when she got sucked out of the plane. And the two of them have been recuperating together and they come back badass in 9 or 10.
She had blown out and became a cyborg.
Exactly.
Which was sad, but...
But pretty badass, am I right?
I'm pretty sure she's gone.
So just to put it out there, there's an interview with Neil Moritz, who's one of the producers. He says, we kind of have the ending point of the franchise, but we don't know the in-betweens yet. Yeah, the plan is to make 2 more movies. That's all of us kind of putting our heads together and coming together with what we think is a very special ending.
Okay, so, that sounds more definitive. Yeah, that does sound definitive. Although,
but they are doing the spinoffs with...
I think when your movie franchise makes like what $600 million in a weekend, you might be able to go. How about one more? How about one more after that?
Yeah,
I don't see it ending.
It is a danger.
It is a danger. You know, it could get pretty bad.
Yeah.
I think one of the smart things about the franchise is to usually have one or two personalities that like people rally around. So you got Paul Walker, you had Vin Diesel, now The Rock.
Yep. Now Jason Statham.
Now Statham. You have and everybody else is kind of fun supporting characters.
By the way, and I know this is dangerous territory, But tell me you would not watch a spinoff that was like all hacker-centric with like Tej and Ramsey and Roman.
With their 90s style hacking stuff?
Like the three of them doing like a hacker heist type thing. You'd watch that.
I'd probably watch it.
Yeah. Those guys would be good together. They could carry a movie.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, that's such a huge ensemble. Also, what I think could happen is if they wrap it up in 2021, you wait about 10 years, and then you bring back Fast and the Furious, A New Generation, with Paul Walker and Jonah Brewster's kid as the leader of the new gang.
Yeah, I can see it. It's not that hard to imagine.
No.
I'm just saying, Fast and the Furious will never die. By the way...
And then, who's the mom in there?
Jordana Brewster.
Right. Jordana Brewster, she can be like, you know, she's like, he didn't want this for you.
Yeah,
And he's like, don't tell me what to do, Mom!
Exactly.
It's in my blood.
Yeah.
I've got oil in my blood.
Yeah.
I'm dying of oil in my blood.
Oh, and The Rock's kid could be in it?
Yeah.
I mean, she's his daughter. Like, it could be a totally awesome franchise. Yeah. By the way... I did just marathon like 5 through 8 in a weekend.
Yeah.
So I might be a little high on Fast and the Furious. Right.
You have oil in your blood.
I have oil in my blood and I'm dying. okay. So there is also some TV stuff that's going on. Black Company. Are you guys familiar with this?
Right. So when I know a little bit about it. It's a series of fantasy novels that I was... At several times I've been almost about to look into, and never have. But it's about a mercenary company in a fantasy world.
Right. I've never actually read it, but yeah, it's a...
And it's kind of gritty military men
stuff. Yeah, they're sort of spec ops in a fantasy world.
I think
I tried
reading it, and I don't know if I could get into it very well.
But it's much beloved. It's Glenn Cook did the writing. It's a series of novels. I think it came out in the 80s, maybe. It's being developed by IM Global Television, so they don't have a network yet.
Right.
Eliza Dushku is co-producing. David Goyer is co-producing. Eliza Dushku will be the lady, a dark sorceress who hires the mercenary Black Company.
Yeah.
And she's the one who rules the Northern Empire. It sounds like she might be kind of a bad guy. I'm not really sure.
I've seen a few people mention her who've posted about it, who've, I think, read the books on... Just reading friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
And although I think Eliza Dushku is precisely passable as an actress... no one has, I would assume my friends know that too. No one has been like, ugh, she's going to bring it down. So she might be okay for whatever the role is.
I feel like more Goyer.
Goyer's the big worry. But here's the thing. Goyer, the biggest issues with Goyer is that he has no respect for the source material of like
superhero stuff.
So maybe he's more of a metalhead Black Company fan.
Yeah, I can see it.
The interesting thing is they've optioned the 10-book fantasy series as well as a forthcoming book titled Port of Shadows. 10 books is pretty good, I think.
Yep.
But it also says...
Fast and Furious link.
Chronicles the events surrounding Croker and his cohort right after the first 3 Black Company books. I'm like, does that mean there are 13 books altogether? Fantasy books. I don't know.
I got lost in the math, but...
At any rate, you look at something like Game of Thrones, and of course the Wheel of Time is being developed.
Right.
Like, I'm sure that people are looking into this kind of, like, epic fantasy type stuff.
But they're also probably looking at, like, I think Shannara is just squeaking by as profitable.
Yeah.
But
that's MTV. That's their fault.
Right. But also, I think the property too is probably
isn't Shannara like a strict Lord of the Rings ripoff, like a real Lord of the Rings ripoff?
Like the first book in it, from what I understand, was like hyper Lord of the Rings ripoff, like 9 companions traveling across the land to deal with the Dark Lord. There's a secret weapon and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. I gather it sort of found its own legs eventually, but Wheel of Time, by all accounts, is although I could never get into it, I couldn't even get through the first book. Is more its own thing, and Black Company definitely sounds like a unique spin on the fantasy genre. So
yeah,
I'd be interested to check it out.
Yeah, I'm curious, and you know, Game of Thrones is going to end. We're going to need some other stuff to watch. Yep.
We're going to forget what it's like to see people stabbed with swords, and we're going to need something.
We're going to have to do it here in the store. Kingsman: Golden Circle, the sequel to Kingsman, got a trailer.
Yeah,
looks super fun.
Yep.
I can't remember. Did you see Kingsman?
I've not seen it.
Okay,
I've seen it. So many times.
I've seen like 3 or 4, which is pretty good for me. I really like it.
It's highly entertaining.
I was trying to figure out I guess I know the premise is somebody gets recruited into this, and is he some nobody?
He's a British street kid who gets recruited in a sort of order of a gentlemanly spot.
Why does he get recruited?
He was the son of a...
Yeah, his dad was part of this team.
Like an elite commando.
And it's real like hyper-stylized action. Pretty, very R-rated though.
Yeah, very R-rated. It's directed by Matthew Vaughn, who is a really good director.
Yes,
he's a guy that did Instrument First Class. He did Layer Cake.
And most things adapted from a Mark Millar story.
But
is he really good or is he good?
He's really good.
He might be just good. But he's good.
Yeah.
He's good.
Like, I liked X-Men First Class, but it was good.
I would put I would put Kingsman up there with really well done action movies. Okay. Like it's a solid action movie that has a good sense of humor.
And plus, it's heightened by a really good cast of characters and got good actors involved. I mean, it had Samuel Jackson. It's got Colin Firth. Who's the guy who played Sinestro?
Mark Strong, who's actually great as like Merlin, who's like their tech guy.
Yeah.
And then this one has a pretty like Halle Berry, isn't it?
Julianne Moore is in it.
Oh, and the fun thing is that they're doing a like American version. It's called The Statesman.
Yep.
And so they're all like in, you know, just like the Kingsmen are like the epitome of British spies. They've got like the the tuxedos and the spoke suits and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
The Americans all have cowboy hats. One of them has like a high tech whip.
Right, I did see that in the trailer, and I thought that was just... What it reminded me of was like a kind of a modern, maybe more violent version of the crazy cowboy dude from Innerspace, of all things.
Yeah.
But that was like an American...
I believe this is the American secret agent team, and they're all like...
they're going to be ridiculous caricatures of America.
Yeah. Well, and who's the guy?
It's Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum is one of the guys. And I forget who the other one is.
No one's more American than him.
It's not the dude, is it? No.
Jeff Bridges?
It's not Jeff Bridges, I don't think.
No, but I know Julianne Moore is in it.
Who is the guy in Innerspace?
Dennis Quaid? No.
It's not Dennis Quaid, is it? It might be Dennis Quaid. I don't know. Anyway, it lists them all at the end of the trailer, and this looks like super fun.
It does.
And they're also bringing back
Colin Firth.
Colin Firth, and he has a badass spy eye patch now.
Well, yeah.
A spy patch.
Yeah, because that's how he survived.
I watched the trailer, and I got the impression that were we supposed to think he was dead maybe from the previous one?
Yes.
Yeah, well, he's very clearly dead in the previous one.
Oh, okay. And
not very clearly.
Well, they don't see it, but
you don't actually see his dead body.
He was in the car with Han?
He gets shot in the head. It seems pretty clear.
Right.
Could have just grazed.
People that survived shot.
I think it went through his eye. That's what his eye got damaged.
Yeah.
And then, it banged off his bulletproof brain.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Usually that'll take personnel, but maybe he's different.
Maybe, yeah.
I wonder if Mark Millar has some writing credit in here.
I didn't see it. He looked like he had no credit on it. He might get a credit for creating original characters, which could be good.
Yeah.
I'm psyched for that. Then we got movie dates for Fox's X-Men movies, all for 2018. So, New Mutants has April 13th.
Uh-huh.
Deadpool 2 is June 1st. And now named Dark Phoenix, November 2nd. They actually are calling it Dark Phoenix.
We were talking about this, and I'm like, it's probably, you know, still one of the most well-known storylines in all of comicdom. It's crazy not to use the name.
Yeah, so, I agree.
I do regret that it's probably, because Singer's directing, right? It's still a continuation of what they've been doing.
Yeah.
It is probably not going to be the one, though.
Yep,
It's not going to be that perfect version of Dark Phoenix that we all wanted.
No, I need the Shi'ar. I need the Shi'ar to be in it. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah, I don't need, I don't need all the crazy space opera stuff they have, but you do have to indicate intergalactic civilizations. There's got to at least be a couple empires and stuff out there.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. All right, now we got three bits of DC news. DC's been making some moving and shaking, and they had some big news at, the Diamond Summit. First of all, something we noticed that they haven't been gone out of their way to tell you is that there's digital copies on a lot of their stuff now.
Yeah, all of their monthly books.
All their monthly books, and some of the bi-weekly are starting to get, too.
Some of them.
So it's basically like you get the free digital copy, just like Marvel does.
Right.
Which I think is what everybody prefers.
Yeah.
Like, that's what everyone would like, is, get the digital as a free add-on.
Why do they not do it with their bi-weekly
ones? I don't understand why. No, I have no idea.
You'd have to ask DC Marketing. Okay. Sorry.
I can't figure out why they would do it the way they're doing it, but that's what they're doing.
We couldn't figure out why Marvel took theirs away.
Yeah.
But at least you are getting the digital copy for the book you buy.
Yes.
Which is when you do get one, it's for that book. So that's good.
Also should be coming back with Marvel when Secret Empire 1.
Yes, yeah. Marvel did learn their lesson. Not quickly enough, but they did learn their lesson. Then DC also has this thing called Dark Matter. They're doing a Dark Knight Metal, which is the event that Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are co-writing and creating.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Here's what I want to say about this. I'm not going to trash this whole thing because I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But Capullo seems like kind of a meathead.
He is.
So Capullo says this about Dark Knight's metal. Scott and I are opening doors nobody thought we were going to go through. The promo I did was Batman holding two battle axes. So this is the kind of crazy stuff we're going to see in this. Is Batman holding two battle axes the craziest thing you can think of? Like, has he never read a Morrison comic? I just feel like, I'm like, dude, set your sights a little higher than Batman with a couple of battle axes.
Yeah, It's not something, he probably only occasionally picks up a battle axe when he's in a museum fighting somebody. I don't think he's trained with it.
I'm just saying, that is not the thing I would choose to pitch.
He put points in it when he was making his character. Let's put it that way.
But it's going to launch a bunch of, either new characters or sort of D-listers that they're giving their sort of big A-list creators a chance at. So Dan DiDio and Justin Jordan and Kenneth Rocafort are doing a book called Sideways about a teleporting teenager. The Silencer by Dan Abnett and John Romita Jr. is a former world's deadliest assassin whose life in the suburbs is ruined when her former life comes back to haunt her. Immortal Men, which is their take on The Immortal Man, James Tinian and Jim Lee. It's a story about five immortal siblings who operate from the shadows, recruiting the elite against the foes who seek to bring them out of Armageddon, which sounds a little old guardy to me.
Mm-hmm.
But in a different, it's going to be like bigger scale. Damage by writer Robert Venditti and artist Tony Daniel, and in which army recruit Ethan Avery is granted the power to unleash an unstoppable monster for 1 hour at a time, which is an interesting blend of Hourman and Damage, because Damage was Hourman's kid, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Or was he? He was Adam's kid.
He was Adam's kid.
So they're like mixing Hourman and Adam weirdly. And then New Challengers, written by Scott Snyder with art by Andy Kubert, a reboot of the Challengers Unknown with a new cast and a new mission. So still kind of sketchy on what all we're getting.
It's not going to be the classic. There was a fighter pilot, like a mountaineer.
Yeah.
In the Challengers the Unknown, what is it going to be like now? A hacker.
A hacker. A social media expert.
An anarchist.
A meme maker.
A parkour
guy, an anti-fascist. Yeah, yeah. You know what, you joke, but I'd read it.
I think there's possible legs there. So I was looking at some of the designs and stuff, and I liked the work that they were doing. I worry always about an event designed to create new characters, IPs.
They also, Dan DiDio said, this is their attempt to do diversity, and that's a laudable goal, but his diversity is almost entirely white men. Like literally everyone except
diversity
Jim Lee.
Diversity of characters or diversity of creators?
There's no diversity of creators. But his diversity of characters, I'm like, maybe? But even then, I'm like, do you just mean diversity in terms of they're not popular? Is that what you think diversity is?
I don't know.
At any rate, it felt like when he first announced that this was going to be a diversity initiative, I'm like, oh, cool, they're going to bring in some new creators, maybe get some new voices. But it's all there, their artists doing writing, which is my least favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of characters that...
But they are, if I'm not mistaken, co-writing with regular authors.
Yes, that
so
is
hopefully
true.
It's not just going to be Image 2.0.
Yeah.
Or Top Cow 2.0.
Yeah.
And I'm actually looking forward to the Challengers. I've always liked the Challengers, and, Scott Snyder is a pretty good writer, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have some interest in this. I don't know... I think the problem is that, characters do tend to, I think, work best when they... I don't think they necessarily have to occur organically, but they do need to be built up a little bit. So, I always look to the shining example recently is Kamala Khan.
Yeah.
Strong first issue, good character hook.
Yep.
Good costume out of the bat, right out of there, good artist and stuff like that. If you're trying to do, if she was, one of, 8 or 10 characters created at the same time.
Yeah.
It feels more like a pitch, though. Obviously, she was a pitch. They were trying to get people to buy her product,
You said pitch.
Yes. They're trying to get people to buy her product. They're going to, buy Ms. Marvel's stuff.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that. You want to sell your book. But when you're kind of hitting up with a bunch of them, it just feels a little mercenary, maybe.
Yeah. We'll see.
I kind of like how some of these people look, and I'm curious to see. I think it'll be better than Bloodlines.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. That's the bar we're aiming for.
The 90s series where aliens would bite humans, and occasionally their bites would actually make the people get superpowers.
What about the 2016 version of Bloodlines?
That's definitely going to clear that bar. Nobody even read that.
Right, the original one at least gave us Hitman.
Exactly.
That's true.
And Damage, actually, I think. Oh, no, Damage was in that same time.
But I'll say this. Those alien parasite creatures, kind of neat looking.
Yeah, Kelly Jones is on them, maybe, or somebody like that. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see on this one.
Anyway, final bit of DC news, and this is a big surprise. DC Entertainment is launching an unnamed digital streaming service next year, which apparently is going to be the home to the third season of Young Justice, as well as that DC Titans series that TNT was going to do. Greg Berlanti is running it alongside Akiva Goldsman. You might remember from Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. You also might remember from the Academy Award-winning Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
So it might not be terrible, but the odds aren't great. Jeff Johns and Sarah Schechter from DC are listed as executive producers. It's going to center on Dick Grayson. It's, I mean, this was a show that I was like, oh, this is probably terrible, but I kind of want to see it. And now we're going to see it.
This is if you pay for the streaming
service. But Young Justice, that's really cool. And I guess it's not going to be on Netflix. I guess they're going to do... But the nice thing about this... The thing that I think is the silver lining of the one more streaming service to buy, because that is annoying.
It is.
Is you have to have content to do a streaming service.
Yeah.
And that means that theoretically maybe all the various Batman and Superman and Justice League and all that were going to be... They'll be on here. Like,
yeah.
And Brave and the Bold and all those will be streaming regularly. As opposed to, like, falling in and out of Netflix.
And I bet they do, like, creator stuff and things
and,
like that.
And that's the other thing. Like, all the direct-to-video movies they did will probably be available there. And then that means they've got to start making more. Like, maybe another animated series. You know, that kind of thing. So, if we get more DC animated content or even live-action content out of it, that'd be worth it.
Yeah.
It is frustrating to have one more to buy. But, you know, if that's the price I got to pay to get Young Justice back, I'll pay it. I feel about this much stronger than I do about Paramount launching a streaming service just for Star Trek.
Because it's called Young Justice Outsiders, I believe, is what, yes, I think that's what it's right. called.
Yep.
So that'll be the third season.
But yeah, we'll see. I guess that's coming next year. All right, that is it for us for news this week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, April 26th, and the final week of this month is pretty solid. I think we all had a pretty good week of reading.
Yeah.
There was actually so many books that there's still some that I have not gotten around to in, you know, trying to cram before the podcast. There was at least three or four that were pretty big on my list that I didn't get to.
So you may have to redact your pick this week and replace it with a different pick.
That's right. Yeah, week. I'll come back next week and I'll be like, sorry about that. That one was actually a stinker. Let me tell you what was really good.
So wait for that.
Yeah. So, Nick, why don't you kick us off this week?
That's my yawn. Sorry. Now, for me, this was sort of X-Men week, because we got three books of X-Men Blue, Gold, and Weapon X, but the best one for me was X-Men Blue. I'm really enjoying this team, this young team that Colin Bunn is writing, giving them a little bit more character, a little bit more to do. We're also seeing their relationship with Magneto, who is apparently leading them. But of course, he has ulterior motives, because why wouldn't he? But I'm enjoying just seeing these characters interact with each other and sort of fight each other over sort of leadership and Beast using magic, what that means. It's also setting up a lot of subplots.
I am still wrapping my head around that one, by the way.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
Well, there's maybe a reason why he's doing that. There's a subplot in this one that alludes to maybe somebody being in control of Beast's body. So we'll see where that goes.
I hope it's Sugar Man.
I kind of have a feeling I know who it is,
Is it Belasco?
It is not Belasco.
Is it the Shadow King?
That is who I'm thinking of.
Yeah, well, we know they're going to do Shadow King since he was so big in Legion.
But there's that. The Cyclops is interesting. It's the same one that Mark Waid's been writing in Champions, but I'm liking Jean Grey as the leader.
Okay.
And
art looks nice.
When did she chop her hair, by the way? For this series? Has it been for a while?
You know what, Dave? As a man, it's really not polite of you to ask about Jean Grey's hair.
Like, I wasn't asking her.
It's not your business.
Because, you know, whenever I see her, I think that's Rachel Summers.
Yeah,
and it messes with my head.
Same here. Yeah. No, Rachel Summers has that dumb costume and codename over in X-Men Gold.
Right.
Yes.
This one is generally keeping to they're all the young versions of the X-Men, but Magneto.
But from an alternate reality, yes.
Yeah.
And the art here by Jorge Molina is fantastic. Really nice.
It reminds me of Olivier Coipel.
Yeah, it does. And there's a Danger Room sequence in here that's really fun. So overall, it's just a good X-Men book. It's hitting all the buttons that I want.
Who are they fighting?
This one, they're fighting themselves a little bit.
They're fighting ennui.
And
the X-Men do fight themselves a lot.
And Danger Room, there are also some Sentinels that show up.
Yeah.
And we learn a lot of ulterior motives of things going on.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, I think it was pretty much
what
everything I wanted
out of it. Ulterior motives of the Danger Room Sentinels?
you know, that actually...
Well, I said Danger Room, and then there's... Sentinels is a separate
thing. Oh, okay.
Also, Whedon did do the whole arc.
I was going to say, there was Danger.
Trying to put that behind me, Randy.
Yeah,
thanks
no,
a lot.
I don't like it either.
Thanks a lot for reopening old wounds.
Cerebra?
I don't know.
Well, yeah. that was Morrison.
Yeah.
Yes. But Danger was Whedon.
I don't like that character.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to jump ahead of Dave because my thematic pick is I liked X-Men Gold this week. That is my pick.
Oh, you're like, I don't need
I don't need these young X-Men.
No, I like these old
X-Men. You like something that has Old Man Logan in it.
I do. I actually do like something that has Old Man Logan in it, which... I am not a believer in Old Man Logan, but the way that Guggenheim is writing...
he believes in you.
Yes. The way that Guggenheim is writing this is very much like a Claremont X-Men. Like, there's a woman who's works for something called the Heritage Foundation, I think, which is very much a... they're posing as a think tank, but they're basically an anti-mutant organization. None of that kind of thing happens in the real world, of course.
Right, another one of those things where comics don't really tie in.
And they've put together... what it looks like they've put together a Brotherhood of Evil Mutants to basically frame the X-Men, or sort of start up this anti-mutant conversation that then they can work the other angle on.
Right.
Which, by the way, that's the plot of the movie Dragnet. The same person is behind both factions, so that's I want to call that out, because that Tom Hanks, Dan Aykroyd vehicle does not get enough love.
That's Paganism. An interesting point.
So,
look out, Muppets.
The classic, the team here that they've got for the Brotherhood of Mutants is really good. Brings in a couple of sort of B-listers I was surprised to see.
And is literally called the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Yep. Once again, after having kind of become the more reasonable-sounding Brotherhood of Mutants. Yep. They didn't actually proclaim themselves
because,
to be evil.
That's because they are doing as propaganda.
Right. And I read the stuff in there, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool how they found a way to do it.
But the things that I like in here is, in addition to just sort of the Claremontiness of it all, it's got good character stuff, it's got good action, they come up with a really cool version of the Fastball Special, is... I love what they're doing with Kitty Pryde as a leader. I was very skeptical of it, but she has this interaction with Captain America here, sort of about, you know, the logistics of running a team and the PR problems the X-Men are having and how it interacts with S.H.I.E.L.D. And it was kind of fun to see Kitty being sort of the grown-up face of the X-Men. And then their Old Man Wolverine, they're basically just playing him like Wolverine at his most badass. He's like... being interrogated by the bad guys, and he's very much being Wolverine at his best.
Mm-hmm.
And leads to a great final scene. I really like this book. I did not find any secret propaganda here from Artie and Syaf. Pretty sure they checked thoroughly for that.
But still, everybody should buy up every issue just in case. Could be worth $1 million next Tuesday.
But Syaf's an okay artist, but I'll be glad when he's gone and I've got a better artist in here.
Right.
But anyway.
You like the writing and just rather have a better artist.
But I'm really liking this. I was as big a skeptic as anyone. I did not expect to be enjoying it, but I think X-Men Gold so far is what I want out of X-Men, which I haven't had for quite a while.
Yes.
Dave, what is your pick?
My pick is actually all about the art. It's almost the flip side here. From Dark Horse Comics comes a new Aliens miniseries called Dead Orbit. Aliens Dead Orbit by James Stokoe, who pretty much every project he does I'm going to check out.
Yeah, well, you remember him from... he did the first issue of Godzilla and Hell we all liked.
Yeah, Godzilla and Hell.
Godzilla...
Half-Century War.
Yes.
Orcstain before that.
Yep.
If you have not seen his blog, or maybe it's on his Tumblr or whatever, please Google Spider-Man in Vietnam.
It's amazing.
And James Stokoe.
Yep.
And check out his amazing... This is not a real project. It's just something really cool that he drew as if it were for a real project. Like, he colored it and everything and did a few test pages and stuff.
Yep.
Anyway, so this guy who does such intricate artwork is a pretty natural for the style of Aliens, which had, you know, originally, aside from the amazing designs of H.R. Geiger, like Mobius and other guys worked on those suit designs, the spacesuits and stuff in the original 70s one, a lot of comic guys. So this is right up his alley. This one kind of plays around with some of the traditions that we know of lone survivors in ships and things like that. What do you call it? Like recovery teams, salvage teams.
Yeah.
And it begins at this big, at like a fuel station, and jumps around in time a little bit. But broadly speaking, the plot has them kind of a group.
I mean, it's a pretty standard alien plot. A lot of ways, they find a derelict vessel.
Right.
An alien shows up, essentially.
Right. Well, they go in there. There's actually some interesting stuff beforehand with them dealing with the crew that's in hypersleep.
Yeah.
Where something fairly horrific occurs.
Yeah.
That actually has nothing to do with an alien.
Right.
But yeah, it's that kind of blue-collary team like the original Alien movie, kind of...
No Space Marines.
No Space Marines in this one. In fact, I think when they're getting ready to come over, they're like, do we have any weapons at all? And they're like, there is one gun or whatever, but you jettisoned all the ammo after What's-His-Name got drunk and was shooting it in the ship.
Yeah.
So there's some fun stuff and, you know, some banter between the characters, and it'll remind you a little bit of the original Alien.
Yeah.
you know, in a lot of ways, the James Stokoe project, he is such an insane artist. Part of what you are looking for here, though, is the art. And it's his interpretations of all those vehicles and ships and suits and stuff like that. And it is hugely three-dimensional and believable. The it's like you gorgeous. It's like you have entered his world when you do it, you know, as surely as you know, any stylist artist, you know, when you walk in there and you like believe it in a very three-dimensional way.
This kind of feels like heavy metal's Alien.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I agree. Interestingly, I think you probably know this, Heavy Metal did the adaptation of the movie, that one that Simonson drew way back in the late 70s.
This feels of a piece with that, actually.
Yeah.
He's got the sort of the gritty, ugly spaceships and that kind of thing that is part and parcel of that world.
But he also, it's a little bit decompressed, so if somebody's like kind of prowling around in the underbelly of a ship, there's the room, it has a little bit of room to breathe, kind of like in the manga tradition.
Yeah.
And there is a kind of, there's a cool sequence in here where a guy who's clearly very paranoid about running into aliens starts like seeing shapes in like just like the machinery of the walls and stuff like that and spotting them, and it looks, just the way they show it is really cool. Anyway, if you have been looking for an Alien project or you like James Stokoe's artwork, I'm going to suggest this one. I've been meaning to catch back up on Brian Wood's one and see what's going on there, since I generally like Brian Wood's writing. I remember the art was a little bleh for me on that one, and this is anything but. So check it out. Aliens Dead Orbit.
Nick, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick incorporates characters from DC Comics, Batman, and then a radio drama / Pulp Hero 90s era movie that I fell in love with, and that is The Shadow.
Yeah.
And it does it in pretty astonishing way. Scott Snyder and Steve Orlando write this one. And
Riley Rossmo on art?
Yeah, Riley Rossmo on art.
That's really the last scene book. Doing Hellblazer stuff.
Yeah.
But this basically inserts Lamont Cranston and The Shadow into DC continuity.
Yeah.
Sort of as if it's just always been that
way. It's always been that way.
Yeah, and Batman's never heard of him, but he's doing a mystery, like looking for him.
Yeah, and sort of starts out with a person's murder that Batman is investigating and kind of leads to a mystery that he's having trouble solving, which leads him to an old master that trained him. And it's really fun.
This was super good. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was.
Just sort of seeing them clash, Batman and the Shadow, it's an interesting idea.
Why are two heroes fighting?
Well, Shadow does use guns.
Yeah, Shadow.
Also, he seems like he might have gone a little crazy.
Yeah, okay. Over the years, he may have lost it a little bit.
Or there might be something else going on. Who knows?
True. Who knows? Only the Shadow knows.
He might be.
The
Shadow does. Clayface.
He's probably not Clayface.
Formed into a hat.
Don't think.
Wait
it's
a minute. What if
that?
It's regular Shadow, but Clayface as his hat and like scarf and guns, going crazy?
This is why Dave doesn't get to write Batman Shadow.
I've got other ideas too, Randy.
Yep, go ahead.
But there's...
It's Penguin.
No, there's lots of cool things in here. I mean, Batman, of course, dons his Matches Malone thing.
Yep.
It looked investigatorial.
There's some investigative stuff dealing with a lot of Shadow's cast of characters, but sort of like
he's
older
got his
versions
agents.
Of them. And, they're dealing with sort of the agents of the Shadow.
You said older versions. Do you mean, like, that these are supposed to be some of the same dudes who were with him back in, like, the
50s? They've all aged, because they, you know, he was operating in the 30s, and these are guys who...
They did do a bit of a version of that in the Andy Helfer version.
Yeah.
Margot shows up, and things like that.
Oh,
so
interesting.
We get all of, like, what the trappings of the Shadow.
I've always liked the Shadow having his network of operatives. I always thought it was a cool thing, where they've got, like, he rescues somebody, and then they have to work for him.
Yeah, he's a little bit dictatorial about it. He's, like, a good guy, but he'll kind of press you into service.
He's kind of a good guy, but kind of a dick.
Yeah he is. Alec Baldwin played
it
pretty
well. Like, it's kind of like, you're going to join, and this is going to become your life, but you'll do some good.
Yep.
So get ready to...
Let's do some good.
Yes.
They specifically mentioned his driver, which in the movie was Peter Boyle.
I had forgotten that.
Yep. I don't know. I thought it was a really good crossover.
Is it a miniseries then?
Yeah.
Yes, it is a miniseries. It is 6 issues long, as the cover tells us.
But that'd be crazy if it wasn't like an ongoing. Like a Batman Shadow ongoing.
I mean, I guess so.
I could see it.
I guess I wanted to know what length the miniseries was.
But I'm just saying they could do like a New Brave and the Bold where it's Batman teaming up with other characters.
Yeah.
Like, that'd be cool.
Well, you mean they, like, other characters that are not traditionally not in DC traditional continuity? DC
characters, yeah.
Didn't they do Batman Shadow? Didn't DC try to do that when their weird crossover
they did
thing?
First wave.
Brian Azzarello.
First wave. But, yeah, it was
drop right. the Drop the ball on that.
This is nothing like that.
No, this is good.
This is good.
Yep. my backup is...
Yes, Randy, your backup.
Britannia, We Who Are About to Die, number one, which is a new miniseries. Britannia was a valiant book that was about a Roman centurion who, after a mind-breaking encounter... was put back together by the Vestal Virgins and is now a detectioner. He has an eye into cause and effect in the human psychology long before those worlds were known. So he's like a...
Roman profiler.
The world's first detective, basically. Yeah, yeah. And this deals with a... He's back in Rome now. The last one he was in Britannia, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
And now he's back in Rome and there's some kind of mysterious murders that seem to be involving the gods. And he's possibly hallucinating because he also is still a little broken... But he's looking into this mystery of, like, the corrupt Roman Senate and people being murdered, and...
There is overt supernatural stuff in Britannia.
There's overt supernatural stuff. And there's also this is going to tie into the gladiatorial arenas.
Okay.
And there's a cool closer with the This has art by Juan Jose Rip, and it's really, really nice.
He seems very fitting for decadent, violent Rome.
Yeah. I really like this, and it's sort of outside the rest of the Valiant universe, but it's a really fun series, and if you like the first one, you should pick this one up. If you have not read the first one, trade's only $10. What are you waiting for?
Yeah, I also vouch for it.
Dave, what you got?
All right, I don't know if you're ready for this one. This is the
I'm ready. I'm
one
prepared.
Of the weirder picks I've had since, I'm going to say, what was the shark? Or the grizzly shark.
Grizzly shark.
And it's a somewhat similar theme, I'm going to say. Yes, from Albatross Comics, this is a little smaller company, I gather, comes Nam Wolf. Yes, that's right. Just like Vietnam and a wolf.
Yep.
He's a werewolf in Vietnam.
By the way, the writer on this is Fabian Rangel Jr., who also does Space Riders for Black Mass.
Okay. Yeah. That sort of fits the crazy tone of it.
Is he Austinite? No.
I think he's a Texan. I'm not sure if he's Austin. He might be San Antonio or Dallas.
The story, which, by the way, just immediately flipping through it, I really like the stylized art. It's kind of a cartoony thing that's not a traditional kind of brand of stylized art. It, I don't know quite what to compare it to. It almost looks like those European Lovecraft adaptations.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that were... There was like a hint of Tintin, but...
Isn't that I.G. Colbert and... who? Mm-hmm. Isn't that artist?
Probably that so.
And it looks a little Guy Davis-y to me,
Yeah,
too.
I would say there's for sure some Guy Davis, and if you ever read the old EC War comics, Jack Davis, would go on to be like a Mad Magazine artist, but before he got real cartoony, he was a little closer to this, because there's also some, like, fairly seriously drawn military stuff, but it's always, the characters have a little bit of cartooniness to them. And so it's 1970, and you've got a kid enlisting who's, He's kind of... Looks like he's just doing his duty, and his dad's telling him not to do it, and it seems like his dad maybe knows some secret about him that he has not told his son. and we're about to learn that secret. First, we meet the rest of the team, and this is the part that felt like a Sergeant Rock book to me, or any old-school military comic. Yep. Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos would also fit, because you got a variety of sort of character types. They're actually a little more thoughtful than just a whatever their code name sort of thing
There's
is.
There's no ice cream soldier.
No ice cream soldier, but there is a guy named Radio Jones.
Okay.
There's a guy named Geronimo, who they describe as a Latino from South Texas who got mistook for Apache.
Okay.
So he gets there, and you're kind of getting a little bit of the kind of traditional Vietnam introduction thing. I think it feels a little more PG-13 than like a hard R, so like more like those old war comics, and not like super like... prepare for the grim horrors of war.
Right.
This is a little bit more, honestly, wartime adventure.
So less Full Metal Jacket, more...
more Sergeant Rock.
Yeah.
And they get ambushed while they're out on a run.
Uh-huh.
And there is a little bit of, a little slightly gory violence that honestly somewhat reminded me of Kirkman-type comics.
Okay, all right.
Marty Spencer... Which I'm trying to figure out if that's a nod in some way to Marty McFly, a.k.a. Michael J. Fox, a.k.a. Teen Wolf.
It could be.
Could be. Anyway, he wolfs out. And next thing you know, he's running around with machine guns in hand as a werewolf fighting the Viet Cong. You know what else it reminded me of? Yep. What's that one where that dude got super strong and muscly, and then he fights, dude? Strange Adventures of Luther Strode.
Okay, yeah.
There's a little bit of... Randy, you see this dude's head getting chopped in half by claws, or into quarters, actually. And then somebody says, ay, Dios mío, because it's a war comic, and I guess there are some racial stereotypes.
Sure.
And then there's a panel of a werewolf firing a machine gun.
Yep.
It's that kind of book.
Yeah.
You gotta run with this one, have fun with it. It's I really like the art, and I actually like his kind of stylized depiction of this big brutish looking werewolf.
Yep.
And I was very particularly happy with what happens at the end, where
I'm not gonna give away the ending.
I don't want to say what happens, but there's a kind of cool thing that happens because of what he's doing. And speaks well to what will come in the next issue.
I hope the Viet Cong have vampires.
There's something they have. They don't seem to be completely without ideas on how to deal with them.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, it's a ridiculous but fun comic. Yep. So, just once again, Namwolf.
Yes.
Namwolf.
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 Or Namwolf.
Or Namwolf. Yeah, that's true. I don't want to judge how somebody pronounces it.
All right, Dave. What else is on your stack?
Let's see. I got the second issue of Brian Wood's new Rebels miniseries about the kid who's a shipbuilder in the post-revolution, but dealing with pirates in the like Barbary Coast stuff.
Yep.
It's interesting because this is a kid who is an adult now, but he's autistic,
mm-hmm.
and he's like really very instinctually like a great shipwright because of his talents. But he gets a lot of resentment, and there's also a lot of like politics going on and discussion of like abolitionists, and sort of like everything is getting political, and he doesn't know how to deal with that. He can't even like interact with folks socially very well, and he's also trying to decide in this one. He's got the guy who he like trained under, the shipwright he trained under, gets him and like knows about his sort of mental illness, and so he's trying to decide whether he should try social situations at all or try and be a great man and use his skills just for the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting. It's fascinating and a thoughtful depiction of somebody, of an autistic person during that era.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Then I've got Jeff Lemire's latest issue of Thanos, which is the halfway mark in his run.
Right, yeah. Wraps the first story arc, we believe, is probably a 12-issue run.
Yep. Big things occur in this issue.
Yes.
I've got Kill or Be Killed, number 8 from Ed Brubaker.
Which, be honest, you kind of wanted to pick.
I kind of wanted to pick. It's another freaking amazing issue.
Great. Such a great
book. Like, just within the first page or two, I was like, oh, that's really good.
Yep.
Let's see what else has not been mentioned here. I want to just mention that Moose...
Is he regular Moose? Small Moose? Medium Moose?
Moose from the Archie comics.
Uh-huh.
I just want to clarify that it's that Moose.
Okay.
Gets his own one-shot. Big Moose.
Big Moose. Okay.
Big Moose is big what... Moose. Actually, it says all new Big Moose.
Not to be confused. Not old Big Moose.
Nah, this ain't your papa's old Big Moose. It's your son's Big Moose. if you know what I mean.
That's a weird place.
Let's see. Some of these ones I didn't get around to reading. I think that's all my stuff.
Okay. For me, Scarlet Spider number 1, which I think is... It's almost like a more violent Spider-Man. Like, he's in Vegas. He's trying to recover from his ill-fated Jackal plans. And he's sort of trying to put together this...
This is Ben Reilly.
Yeah, Ben Reilly. He's trying to put together his sort of Peter Parker-esque life. It's a little quippy. It's Peter David. It's Mark Bagley. I like it, but I'm curious to see where they're going with it, because I think that probably people wanted Ben Reilly to be sort of the classic Spider-Man guy, and this is definitely not that. This is definitely more along the lines of something like Kane.
Okay.
X-Men War number 2, which has the same gorgeous artwork, and is more of Eric being a sort of specialist badass as they fight on an alien world. This is really cool. We still haven't really seen Exo. Like, he's not putting the armor on deliberately, but it's very much Eric the Barbarian going up against an alien.
I really like the team that he's paired with.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a great cast of characters.
Darth Maul number 3, which is all about Darth Maul and the Bounty Hunters running a heist, and is fantastic. I really like this book, and I'm curious to see where they go with it. Old Guard number 2, which is Rucka's Immortals in Combat. Really, really great action in this one. There's some really
Nick
good
points
fight
out that's
scenes.
Issue 3, not 2.
Issue three. Yes. Justice League of America number 5, which starts a new story arc in which they go back to Ray's town, hometown of Philly, where a sort of mythologically influenced weapons manufacturer has promised 100% full employment and is creating weapons in town. So it's got a little bit of that social commentary along with crazy mythological weapons.
And lots of Lobo.
There's some great Lobo stuff in there.
He's still continuing to work well enough within the confines of a Justice League.
I'm liking him as sort of their Wolverine.
Yeah. I mean, that's the role he fills.
Really good week for trades this week. Small Favors, a hardcover, which is the cutest lesbian porn comic you will ever read.
Yep.
It's Colleen Coover. If you've ever read, if you have a fondness for sort of Terry Moore's Strangers in Paradise stuff, but wish, why couldn't it be dirtier? Or if you really like Chester XY or Ojoy Sex Toy, definitely pick this up. I have the trades from way back when that are long out of print. I'm super excited this is back in print. It's really cute cartooning. It is also thoroughly naughty. Like, do not buy this for your kids or your teenagers. It is very, very naughty.
They even decided to shrink wrap this one, which they don't always when we get naughty comics. That's a very classy-looking edition, though, I have to say. It's a classy porn comic that we're carrying.
Then Motor Girl, speaking of Terry Moore, gets its first 5-issue collection. I sort of flipped through this again to remind myself, I'm really liking Motor Girl. It's my favorite thing Terry Moore's done since Strangers in Paradise. And I think people who have not been reading his stuff might want to check in on it. Young Justice Book 1, which is the classic Peter David Young Justice with 90s Superboy, Impulse, and Robin. And this collects the...
He should be called 90s Superboy in them.
He should. Except it was the 90s. They didn't call him that then because it was the 90s.
They should have.
Everybody was 90s, everything. it collects the World Without Grown-Ups story that kicked the whole thing off. Then a Young Justice 1 Million, Young Justice Secret Origins, and of course the first 7 issues of the series.
It's a big looking trade.
Yeah. This is sort of quippy. It was Todd Nauck doing a lot of the art, so it was sort of in that Mike Waringo style, and it was a lot of fun. It was a good
kind
team.
Of a quintessential fun young superhero team.
It's for the people who were Teen Titans was hard to believe now, but there was a time when Teen Titans was sort of out of favor, and this Young Justice was sort of the replacement for it. So it was like they had their Wonder Girl, they had their Arrowette, who's their Green Arrow. So it was like this was the kid hero book.
Do you think, Randy? Of course, there's been a Young Justice cartoon sort of inspired by, but different.
Yeah.
Do you think kids would like the Young Justice comic?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because like it's gonna be a little quippy. Like I can definitely see this going over with kids and teenagers.
Okay.
Saga gets its beautiful second deluxe hardcover, they collect like 3 trades. They're monsters and they're really good. And then Street Angel, which is a hilarious book that has been out of print for a little while, gets a new full-color deluxe hardcover. This is about a teenager who... She lives on the streets, she rides a skateboard, and she knows Kung Fu.
It's pretty true.
Nick, what else is on your list?
Just a few other things. I've got issue 955 of Detective Comics, which is the penultimate issue of the League of Shadows story that they've been doing, dealing with Cassandra Cain and sort of her lineage... or her relationship with her mother and the fate of Gotham City. Mighty Thor number 18, which is the Asgardians and the Shi'ar going at it, and the only one that can save the day is Quentin Quire.
Oh, we're all screwed.
I have to point out the button that he has on his jacket on the cover says Swagnito. That's why we're all screwed, by the way.
Yeah, we're all screwed. Weapon X number 2, which I really enjoyed the second issue, seeing Old Man Logan, Sabretooth, sort of teaming up, fighting against some new villains.
Of the various books I didn't get around to reading, that's the one I really wanted.
Focused on Warpath and sort of introducing him a little bit more.
Who can fly now, which I don't care for, but otherwise it's really cool.
He's been able to fly for years.
I don't care for it.
It's still wrong.
Action Comics 978, which continues sort of Superman's... Refamiliarization.
It's like the rebuilding of his backstory past. Origin and all.
Yeah, learning everything it was, everything from Red and Blue Superman to...
Why would they bring that up?
It's part of his history, and also...
It didn't have to be. if you're fixing history, I think you take that out.
but his regeneration costume when he was killed by Doomsday to just everything. So it's kind of a relearning the world.
Oh, that's right. Dan Jurgens is writing it, and he wrote that Superman Blue-Red stuff, so that's why it's still in.
Yeah. But remember also that Grant Morrison wrote some Superman Blue stuff that was pretty rocking.
Yes, he did.
Which leads into the big one that would have just missed out on my picks, which was The Flash 21, which is the second part of the Button story arc. And this one sort of sees, after the exploits of the last issue, and we get sort of Wally West, or no, Barry Allen sort of trying to use a CSI thing to determine how Thawne died and where, what had happened, how far he was able to travel in time, which leads to the Cosmic Treadmill, which leads to some weird places.
Okay.
Also, we get a Justice Society little teaser as well. So
that's interesting. They're definitely is the net result of this. We're probably gonna that's when the Justice Society will return, or
maybe.
We don't know. But
the wheels that return them will be in motion or something.
But there are definitely big things afoot other than just the Watchmen stuff. So right. Yeah,
like it's the Watchmen stuff will probably ultimately, whatever they do with Dr. Manhattan will probably end up uncovering maybe the Legion. Right. Justice Society, and I'm hoping a fight between Batman and Night Owl in his snow costume.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of just character moments in here. The back and forth between the relationship with Bruce and Barry is interesting. Sort of how they kind of connect over sort of science and investigative stuff. I'm enjoying the story. I'll be curious to see where it ultimately goes in two more issues.
All right. It's a little baby crossover.
It is.
We're halfway through.
All right, that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
Yo-Jo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.